Preds and San Jose Sharks tonight here at Bridgestone Arena. That's where we're at, inside Jack Daniels Barrel House. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick. 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. And to help us with that and a whole lot more, Adam Vinken covers the Predators for the Tennessean. Check out his work there. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm going to start off being the Baby Ruth in the punch bowl. I'm going to disappoint everybody.
I don't understand that reference.
Well, it's a Caddyshack reference.
Okay.
And it's more about Baby Ruth in the pool.
The pool, yeah.
It's in the pool.
It was no big deal, I think the quote was. From Carl Spackler.
Which is still a great scene. Great scene. But the chatter out there, I guess since Canada lost to U.S. in the gold medal game in hockey, and for whatever reason, their sport, curling, didn't work out this year in the Olympics, they have turned their attention to the trading deadline in Canada. I don't know if you've heard, and that's all they're talking about today. And, Adam, the chatter is that David Poile picked up the phone and called the Ottawa brass and said, hey, just out of curiosity, what would it take to get Erik Karlsson here? Now, to be the Baby Ruth in the pool, for everybody that's getting excited about that, I'm just going to go on and say it. There is no serious nature to that story whatsoever. There's no chance of that happening. None. The Blackhawks have a better chance of getting into the playoffs, which I think is 0.8%, than that trade happening. Agree or disagree?
I can't envision a scenario in which Erik Karlsson at any point becomes a member of the Nashville Predators. And, of course, the report you're referring to was the notebook item in Pierre LeBrun's trade deadline notebook on the Athletic website. And I have the passage up that I can share. The Senators, quote, the Senators spoke to several teams about Erik Karlsson this week, and who knows if he is traded or not before Monday's deadline, but I love the fact one of those teams I'm told chatted with them was Nashville. Yes, the Predators, the team with the best top four in the NHL. I can't see how the Preds could ever swing it, so I'd call it a long shot at best, but it just goes to show you that veteran GM David Poile leaves no stone unturned. He probably just wanted to see what's what. One thing we know about him, he's not scared to ask or act. You always hear general managers. There are so many cliches you hear from general managers at this time of the year, and one of them is, we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't talk, or some variance of that phrase. You look at how Erik Karlsson is set up contract-wise. He's got the rest of this year and all of next year under contract. His cap hit is $6.5 million. When that contract expires, it could be close to double that because he is not looking for a hometown discount. I don't think the Ottawa Senators, who have become a pretty frugal organization just based on their financial projections, are going to be able to give him that. It's not certain whether or not he's going to want to stay there if you listen to all of the reports from in Canada. So, you know, it's this time of the year where, you know, it's called silly season for a reason. You know, I've already seen on Twitter today people making up hypothetical trade scenarios in which the Predators trade for Erik Karlsson. There are so many other things that you could probably be doing that are more productive with your time than that. And you're probably
That's
at work, and I'm sure that your bosses are not thrilled that you're spending their time doing that. So, you know, take a deep breath. You know, by Monday at 2 p.m. Central, the dust will have settled. But until then, just step away from the keyboard just a little bit. If you have to, step away from the phone.
Put it down.
Relax.
We also know that the Predators will not be trading for Shea Weber. They're not going to bring Shea Weber back because today the Canadiens announced their defenseman will undergo surgery to repair a tear in his tendon, which is in his left foot, and he is out for the season. So I hate to hear that.
It's unfortunate.
I know it's been a rough year for the Canadiens. It's been a rough year for Shea Weber, but he has been shut down for the season. We had Craig Custance on the show on Tuesday leading up to the Predators-Red Wings game. And, of course, all the Predators brass was up at Little Caesars Arena.
They were, yes.
And Craig Custance put out on The Athletic the following day that he got a chance to speak with Paul Fenton, the assistant GM.
Mm-hmm.
And without having the exact quote in front of me, it was the best case scenario. There is a – Willie, help me with before I – because yesterday I was like, he said he's coming. No, that's not what he said.
He said that
in a perfect world, Or
yes. He said there will be a contract ready for him as soon as his KHL season
right,
is
over. Right,
but
there's the word. What's the word that he used?
I can't predict the future, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
He just basically covered his bases by saying you never know what is going to happen. Remember, Paul Fenton was the guy that said that Jimmy Vesey basically told him, hey, I'm coming. I'm going to sign.
Yeah.
So Paul Fenton has been around he's been around long enough to know that sometimes plans change, things change, et cetera. But I think the biggest thing you get out of that is if you had any doubt that they would like to bring him into the fray, there's probably very little doubt that's going to happen.
I have the quote here.
Okay, so Julian, who is our Athletic subscriber.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's weird. He's sort of this like disembodied voice that we're hearing. He's not here right now. This is weird.
He hasn't sent us. It's like Netflix. We want to be able to use his password and his username, but he hasn't sent it to us yet.
Look, I paid good money for this. But the quote from Preds assistant GM Paul Fenton, we'll have a contract in place, be able to execute and have him come over here. That's the plan. Funnier things have happened. I don't want to say 100%. I never do. That's in our business. Yes, our plan is to have him. Later goes on, talks about his maturity. When you watch a young man play, his maturity is off the charts. That's the thing that jumps out to me the most. You find that with the Finns. They know the details of the game. They pay attention to the details. They do their job. Coaches love that. It's the smarts that give you that edge to win.
The plan is the word I was looking for. So the plan in a perfect scenario is when the KHL season is over to bring him into the fold.
Well, I'm sure at some point, you know, making an A. Who is the guy on the A team with the cigar? Who?
Are you using an A team reference?
An 80s reference.
Yes.
Early 80s.
I love it when a plan comes together.
I'm so impressed.
What character is that? Do we remember neither of you? Okay.
It was not B.A. Baracus.
No. It's been a while.
Okay.
Since
anyway,
the
you can imagine that, you know, the point being is that the Predators, if you know, they love it if when the plan comes together, and that would be the plan, as Paul said in that story with Craig, that, you know, they would love to have Ellie Tolvanen here. And it's not as if, though, the contract they have to have ready for him is going to really be that complicated. It's a 3-year entry level contract. You know, there are certain limits to the amount of money and bonuses and things of that nature. I mean, there's not really much negotiating that has to happen. It's right. You're going to come over. Your entry level contract, because of his age, is going to be 3 years long. Now, because of his age, remember, there's the slide rule. The same thing applied to Sam Girard when he was here at the beginning of the season before they ultimately traded him to the Colorado Avalanche. 10 games. Playoff games do count in that in terms of accruing a year of service in terms of his contract. If Tolvanen were to come over here and he played fewer than 10 games, the contract would slide to the following season.
Was it Hannibal, by the way? He was the
Hannibal.
Yes.
The
Colonel. There it is.
For some reason, Hanrahan was popping in.
No, Hannibal. You're thinking Slapshot. I mean, you're saying Hanrahan.
Slapshot is Hannibal.
Okay. But in terms of Tolvanen, I mean, it's not like the contract is very difficult to execute because they have a guideline in which they have to follow. You know, I think from what I watched of the Olympics, that kid is very special. You know, he has a great shot. That's the one thing I was most impressed by, was just how deadly accurate his shot is. And that would be great, in theory, on a line with maybe Kyle Turris or Nick Bonino or something like that. But I think one thing that Predators fans have to understand is that Tolvanen, if and when Tolvanen does come over, if he does come over during the playoffs, as is the Predators' plan, you can't expect him to be the savior of this franchise. He's not going to be the player, the catalyst that leads this team to a Stanley Cup. Players in his position have contributed. Chris Kreider, 6 years ago, signed his entry-level contract out of college, joined the New York Rangers, had 5 goals in 18 postseason games. Last year, Charlie McAvoy did the same thing. 3 assists in six playoff games for the Boston Bruins, who lost in the first round to the Ottawa Senators. So he would be a great complimentary piece.
A great addition.
But no, I don't think that there are a lot of Predators fans who harbor this feeling, but Ellie Tolvanen is not the answer.
But if the plan
is
to bring him over at some point when it all ends
and
wraps up in Russia, doesn't that factor into what they do or don't do on Monday?
It should.
By Monday?
It should, because you know the Predators have, you know, I would assume, have little to no interest in trading Tolvanen unless they're absolutely blown away by something that they absolutely can't refuse. They're definitely not trading him for a rental. like New York Rangers fans who may be listening to this and salivating over the potential of a Rick Nash or Ellie Tolvanen trade, that's not going to happen. No. I can't. I mean, not saying that Rick Nash may not end up here by Monday, but Tolvanen, I can imagine, will not be a part of that trade. Definitely, you don't want a reverse Forsberg for Erat here, because think about how much that trade is talked about as the most lopsided in NHL recent NHL history. We don't know exactly what Tolvanen is necessarily. It may not pan out, but based on what you see, it's going to be pretty good. And you don't want to give him up for a short-term fix. He's a player that could be a large part of your future.
Yeah, it just they are not trading Tolvanen. It's not going to happen. So, Adam, let's look at guys that, as you search the horizon of guys that might fit, let's take aside what it would take to get any of these guys. Who are, if you had to name three or four targets that make sense for the Predators, who would you think? If you had to guess the best players on their radar based on everything you're hearing, seeing, what do you think?
Well, I think all of these high-profile scoring wingers you keep hearing about, the Predators probably have some coals in the fire, for lack of a better term. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Rick Nash is on their radar. I'm sure Evander Kane may be on their radar. I think maybe they should look a little bit lower. I think Michael Grabner, in theory, would be an interesting fit. If you're just looking at his attributes on paper, I mean, he scores a lot of goals, even strength, and a lot of empty netters. So that sort of pads the stats. But arguably one of the fastest players in the NHL. He's not going to cost you as much as a Rick Nash or a Mike Hoffman or a Max Pacioretty. And he would be a great bottom six guy. I mean, speed, tenacity, I believe he kills penalties with regularity. I think that would be good. I mean, the thing you have to think about, and Willie, this is what Darren and I talked about on the pregame show a couple of days ago. Don't look necessarily at what the Predators are looking for, but look at what the Predators have to offer. They have their first round pick, but when you think about where the Predators are slated to finish, especially if they go as far as they did last year or further, it's going to be 28, 29, 30, 31.
Right.
May not be as enticing. We're all in agreement here that Tolvanen isn't going anywhere unless there's an absolute offer that just drops them all dead.
And I don't know of a player that's out there that would fit
right.
that mold.
So we'll
right now.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
You have Dante Fabbro, who's their top defensive prospect. Playing at Boston University, played in World Junior again this past winter. You know, may represent the future of the next generation of gifted Predators defensemen. When the Ryan Ellis's and the Roman Josi start to get a little bit older, Dante Fabbro might be the next guy that sort of takes on that mantle as the Predators defenseman. Maybe you're more likely to think about him when you look at where the way the contracts and the ages of their current defensemen are out. But then you look past that. You look at the prospects in the American League. You look at their roster players. Do the Predators really have a ton to realistically offer a team that would entice them to trade a Rick Nash or an Evander Kane or a Mike Hoffman? I don't think they do. That's what I keep looking at. Not necessarily what players the Predators may go after, but what those teams are asking for. And if the Predators realistically have what it takes to get them, because they really traded their best chips in the Kyle Turris trade. Sam Girard, you know, who may have been their most NHL-ready defensive prospect. Vladislav Kamenev, who was their most NHL-ready forward prospect. A second-round draft pick. They really kind of gave up those things that they could use to entice teams around this time of the year to get Kyle Turris. I'm just not convinced that for what they would realistically have to give up to get one of those guys, that they're willing to do it. And that's why I'm not sure that they're going to be a huge player on Monday as people think they are.
I agree. I don't think they are deep with assets that they're willing to give away. For some of the players that are out there. That having been said, you can put together a package of multiple draft picks, mm-hmm. right? Draft picks for next year, draft picks of a second round, third round. There's a combination of picks that become enticing. And then on top of that, if you add another piece that maybe they would be willing to give up, because I don't think Fabbro will be anywhere close to any. They're not going to give up Fabbro to me unless they're completely blown away. Not for the people that are usually involved in these discussions, or at least in the rumors where you're reading. These people that fit the profile of hey, the Predators could be interested. So to me, it comes down to what will the price be? Let's look at it from the other side. If you're the Buffalo Sabres or if you're the Rangers, and you're going to lose these assets. These guys are going.
And they're both rentals. Keep that in mind.
They're both rentals.
They're both rentals. Evander Kane.
You can walk up to the shopping space at the flea market and say, here's the price for these guys. But if nobody's offering that price, and it gets down to 1 o'clock on Monday, and nobody's buying, nobody's biting, you're faced with the possibility of walking away and hanging on to these guys that you have a chance to get something for, and this is your last chance to get something for them. So, to me, that's where the rubber is going to meet the road. And I think that's why if I were to predict, don't you think, Adam, that the last hour on Monday is going to be where you start watching for this stuff? I don't know that we're going to have a whole lot that shakes free until then.
Look, I didn't go to too many dances when I was in school, but you know how it is, right? The dance is wrapping up, and you want to dance with somebody. And you're that guy, and there's one girl left on the bleachers, and you don't want to dance with her, but you have no other choice, right? Except I was the guy on the bleachers that the girls had to the other choice. But what I'm saying is that people get desperate at that time, right? So
I was that guy. I've been there.
So that's what it is. Like, you wonder if it's just, you know, if you wonder if you're Jeff Gorton, Rangers general manager, or Jason Botterill, Sabres general manager, and you still have Rick Nash or Evander Kane on your roster at 1:30 p.m. Central, and you're like, all right, we got to do something. So maybe you wait until then, and I think there's going to be an explosion of deals that usually happen around, like, within the last hour, 30 minutes or so. But just based on what you're hearing about these prices from the insiders in Canada, they're just exorbitant. Like, four pieces for Evander Kane, first-round draft pick, an NHL-ready player, and a prospect.
It's not happening for this organization. Doesn't mean somebody won't jump in there and overpay.
I don't think
David Poile is an incredibly shrewd general manager. And that isn't to say that he hasn't made mistakes in the past, but I don't think he's ever done anything where you've really looked at it and gone, wow, he ended up on the wrong end of that one.
But somebody may. Yes. Somebody else may. Yes. We see it all the time.
Right. They might. But one point that I saw Bob McKenzie put out there yesterday that intrigued me, because there were these rumors with the team in Detroit.
Right.
Hey, watch Tomáš Tatar.
Yes.
Now, he's a guy that has a lot of term left on his contract.
3 years after this one,
I think.
Yeah. And 5.3.
So I was saying, well, there's a guy that doesn't really fit the description of what the Predators were offering. Or Predators have said they were looking at. David Poile said it on our show. Guys whose contract expires this year or next year are the most attractive to us. So Tatar does not fit that.
Nyquist does. Yes.
But Bob McKenzie's point was, well, if the prices are right now are these exorbitant prices for guys who are going to cost you a lot of assets and you only get them for this year and next year, and the price is the same for a guy that's got 3 or 4 years on the contract, well, if you're going to give up those assets, you might as well get an asset back that's going to be there for 4 years. That made some sense to me.
Right, and he's in his late 20s. He's got a $5.3 million cap hit to Tatar for this season, I think 3 years after that. He has a full no trade clause that kicks in on July 1st. And keep in mind, if he's traded by then, the Predators are not obligated to honor that no trade clause. Same thing happened with PK Subban. His clause was kicking in. The Predators made the trade and decided not to honor the no trade clause. PK Subban doesn't have trade protection in his contract. So for those fans who are listening who are worried that they're going to have to get a guy who's going to have a trade clause like that, the Predators, if they make that trade before Monday, are not obligated to honor it going forward, and they do not have to offer any of that protection.
Adam's got to go. He's got to get his hair cut.
Yes.
You should have left on the sock hop reference, okay? That's what you should have done.
It's an important game day routine. We got a regimented schedule here.
That's okay. Yeah. Adam, thank you for your time.
Willie knows what it's like, you know. Yeah. We got to get our hair cut, so we're good.
Yeah, yes. When I think haircuts, I think Willie Donick. Adam Venkin from the Tennessean. Go read his stuff. He covers the Predators. Good insight there. I think you're underestimating how many times when you're saying they're not going to pay that, somebody always buckles. It only takes one team to buckle and overpay. It's not going to be this team, but other teams in the league. By the way, this is when people start freaking out. I used the reference yesterday, St. Louis Blues. They're going, well, you know, a couple weeks ago we were firmly planted into the playoff picture. Now we're like, we can see the outside. We can see outside. We're still inside, but we can see outside. Maybe we need to add something. I mean, there's a lot of those teams where they're going, okay, for the final push, we need a push. We need somebody to help us out. So something 2 weeks ago we weren't willing to pay that price, but we may consider it now. It's not going to be this team, but other teams may do that.
I still think.
Why do you think all this stuff is floating out there? That's also to drive the price tags up.
There's a lot of tactical mind games being played right now with what information is getting flowed through Pierre LeBrun and Bob McKenzie and Darren Drager, Elliot Friedman, all the people, Kevin Allen. I mean, Kevin Allen is a bad example because he's covering the Olympics. But the ones that are on the beat of the national scene that talk to agents, they talk to – I do think that the prices, the perceived prices – are not always the real prices. We're going to find out what the real prices are. And I think you've hit on it, Darren. David Poile has his price. And he has sat here after many a trade deadline over the years and said, prices were too high. Like, he doesn't like to overpay. And especially on this team where he knows he's got Mike Fisher coming. He knows the X factor in Tolvanen. I happen to think that there is a scenario where Tolvanen could get a shot, and you could catch lightning in a bottle for a kid that young. You could. One thing if you read Paul Fenton's quote in there is he understands the game well at his age, and that's an important thing.
It's very important.
And in Finland, they teach the game very well, the structure of the system. This is one thing when you watch Finland play an international play that I've learned, especially from Hal and Mace, who have been in that scenario. The Finns play with very good discipline in the system. That would bode well for an 18-year-old. Could he jump in here and be responsible defensively? I think those are all things that would have David Poile saying, okay, I've got my price of what I'll pay to upgrade my roster, but I'm not going to go past that. I'm not going to reach to get somebody that is not going to be an asset for a while.
Which tells me every day, every hour, every minute, this goes by, as we get closer to Monday, I just kind of feel like what I've said all along is going to play out. I've said all along, I don't think they're going to make a deal, and I don't think they're going to make a deal. I don't think it's going to happen.
I still think it's over 50%.
I don't think so.
You say under 50%?
Oh, yeah.
I say over 50%.
I say under.
Because I do think the prices will drop to be something reasonable. It'll be close. The question is, do they really like the guy that might – end up popping open there? The good thing, it's not like there's one or two guys. There are several guys, and we've named a lot of them here. You want to go down the list of guys? There's Nash, there's Kane, there's Nyquist, there's Tatar, there's Mike Hoffman, there's enough guys to where you say, well, one of them, it's just like you said, it just takes one sucker to overpay. Well, it just takes one team to say, okay, you know, we're not getting anything for this guy. We want to move him. All right, we'll take your package, whatever that package is, a first-round pick plus a second-round pick plus this guy. You know, maybe I think that's the scenario where you say, okay, let's do it.
We'll be back. The Preds and Sharks tonight. We'll actually speak to Kevin Kurz from The Athletic. He's a Sharks reporter coming up at 1 o'clock. Don't forget tonight, if you're coming down for the game, Honky Tonk Hat Trick brought to you by Bud Light. It's back here this evening from 5 until 6:30, the Honky Tonk Central prior to the Predator showdown with the Sharks. While you're over there, register for a pair of tickets to a game and passes to the Bud Light Zone and a chance to win the VIP hockey experience. Make sure you stop by either Tootsie's, Rippy's, and Honky Tonk Central before any Predators home game during the weekday for your Bud Light specials. Remember, the VIP hockey experience is a pair of tickets to an upcoming game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission. So that should be a lot of fun. Tennessee got it done against Florida last night. We spoke with Iman Brennan earlier in the show from the Fieldhouse. But we were talking about how will Grant Williams respond to Rick Barnes kind of cracking the whip on his star player. Well, he responded. We know how he responded. He had a huge game and helped Tennessee beat Florida.
One thing that I'm noticing a lot in these games is with the emphasis now on, and I think the referees have done a good job, and I think the players have made their adjustments. But what's open now, which has created a lot more offense. Remember a few years ago before they made some adjustments, you saw way too many games that were in the 50s and just ugly basketball. I mean, let's just be honest. It was not fun to watch. They had to do something. They did a couple things. They switched the shot clock to 30 seconds, which I was worried about because I was like, that's only going to help the defense more. But they have cracked down on clutching and grabbing and hand-checking. So take Grant Williams. If you get him the ball in the high post or the medium post, he is awfully tough to guard without fouling.
He's almost unguardable.
He gets that spinning jump hook going. You can't stop that. You have to be an incredibly quick defender because you can't hand check him. He spins so quick, he's going to get it up. And once he gets it up on the rim, he's got a very soft touch. So the only thing that you can do is foul him.
You know, or
you have to double him before he gets going.
You know who he reminds me of? And it's weird that I'm using a hockey example. He reminds me of Philip Forsberg on the ice, positioning for the puck. He knows how to use his body properly. When Philip Forsberg wants the puck, he's going to get it. Or if he wants to keep the puck, you're not going to get it from him. The same holds true. Colin Wilson was like that too when he was here. That play like late in the game, Grant Williams, when he positioned his body underneath, the Florida defender had no chance and he got the perfect pass and laid it in for the easy bucket. When he positions his body right, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You're out of luck. You
have to double.
Yeah.
And if you have shooters around him, and Tennessee's got some pretty good shooters, if you double off one of those guys, you're going to give up a pretty good look from three. So that's what's happening a lot. Jeff Roberson, I think, for Vanderbilt's doing a good job right now of operating in the paint, getting fouled. If you have a player like that, even if he's not 7 feet tall, right, you could be a little bit undersized like Roberson and Williams are, and you could be really effective with that. But I think that is one of the toughest things to do is defend from about 15 feet in from a guy who really can knife and spin and draw contact, because you're going to go to the free throw. You're going to get in foul trouble. That guy's going to eat you up. Or you double down and you kick out and you give up open threes. That's why offenses are more efficient this year.
Willie, I told Steve Lehman earlier in the show, in fact, it was right before we went to Iman. I said, I feel like we could do a segment every day saying this is what you missed last night and just recap the games, because if you're not paying close attention, and it's hard because there's so many games, you wake up, if you do check, you're going to be amazed by what you hear, because every day it's like a surprise. It's like you're opening up a new gift because you're going, how did that happen? I mean, it's like every night. Like, for example, I mean, Auburn just crushed Alabama last night. Good win for them. Everybody was trying to figure out, including us, okay, how are the Tigers going to respond without Macklemore? I mean, Alabama, I just can't figure them out. They look good at times where it's
fairly
like they're
simple.
Really, really good, and then you see them other nights and you're like, where did that team go?
Darren, I think it's relatively simple. Bama is they're just not good on the road. Great team at home. On the road, not very good.
But they've got a couple. They have a couple of road wins.
Yeah, but the road wins that they have, like Florida is also one of those teams where they just don't come out and give the same type of effort defensively as offensive. Because I asked Mike White last night, because I've been trying to figure out what happened to the Florida team that I saw back in Portland that looked unstoppable before blowing a 17-point second-half lead to Duke. And he's just like, we like playing offense, but we refuse to play defense with the same type of intensity, and that's been their problem throughout the season. He said it's going to continue to be a problem until the final bounce of the ball.
Okay,
Bama's not good on the road. Florida just doesn't give enough defensive effort, and now we have a six-way tie at third place, complete logjam in the SEC.
So you were there. You got an up-close look at both teams. Let's start on the Florida side. Is that – because that I was going to ask you that. I mean, what is it? They're another one. I mean, I just cannot figure out – I mean – hell, 6 weeks ago, we all thought Florida was the best team in the conference.
Legit Final Four contender.
6 weeks later, nobody thinks that. And nobody's talking about them at all doing anything, because you can't figure them out. Is it just simply that team doesn't want to play defense?
Yeah. the way Mike White, their head coach, conveyed it to me, he said it's basically they just do not give the effort defensively. And Iman Brennan, who joined us earlier, said as much that they, last year with Casey Hill, John Boone, before he tore his ACL, they had the type of defensive players. I still think they do because Chris Chioza, their point guard, is a great defensive player. It's just everyone else on the team buying in defensively, and they have not done that all season long. And he said it's been a problem for them. It's going to continue to be a problem for them until the season's over, which I just don't understand how Florida team that's as good offensively as they are will not give the same type of effort defensively when it seems that they're more than capable.
How was the atmosphere last night?
I think it was, 16,000 people was the official attendance. Like, I think 16,016, but the atmosphere was pretty good. It's been great there all year long. There's a reason why they're one of the top 15 programs in the nation as far as attendance this year. So I thought it was great. Obviously, everyone up there in Knoxville has bought in to this team that's now two games clear of the third place pack and still two games behind Auburn, but solidly going to be probably a top four seed in the NCAA tournament.
I figured you were going to say that, and it just angers me. I shouldn't even ask you because all I do is I get mad because the SEC tournament should be here. It should never be in St. Louis. This is a horrible idea because if there was ever a year for to finally get another fan base to take over this arena, it would have been this year with Tennessee. I mean, their fans would have been here. It would have been littered in orange for their games, where every year it's been here, it's you have to depend on Kentucky to be playing on Sunday afternoon, or we've seen when they go out early. I remember when Vanderbilt put them out. Well, I don't remember what year was that. What was that, about five years ago? And, man, that championship game, I think, was Ole Miss and – was it Ole Miss in Florida? Something like that. And, man, it was a terrible – atmosphere.
It was not capacity.
Tennessee would have been here, man. They would have been here. We're going to get hosed on that. Finally, a fan base would have shown up. I guess they're going to go to St. Louis, but
can't depend on that. I'm looking at how it would play out right now, and for the SEC, best case scenario, if they were going to have a packed house, would be a Friday game against the 4-seed Kentucky and the 5-seed Missouri. Outside of that, I just don't really see any other scenario. Unless Arkansas fans travel, where they're going to get a packed house there at Scottrade Center in St. Louis.
Yeah, Arkansas fans, they used to do it. I'm not sure if they do it the same way before. Hopefully it's a decent amount. Let's get back to Alabama and Auburn for a minute, because that game really intrigued me last night. Your question about Alabama on the road. I think if you ask Avery Johnson, one of the things he would have to say, that after Colin Sexton, who I think is a great talent, but he's a little more of a slasher. I don't know if I would call him a great shooter. He's okay. And the rest of the guys, they lack shooters, don't you think? I think they are good at home. I think shooting on the road is a problem for them. They have enough road wins to where on their resume that won't be too much of a knock on them. But you know, they're you know, sitting there 17-11, 8-7. Now some of these teams still have a little work to do here.
Well, here's an interesting thing, too, Will. You talk about that with Alabama, of looking at how they look at things now with the quadrant one games, where you have to have a top 30 win at home or a top 50 win on a neutral site, top 50 or 75 win on the road. Alabama has the most quad one wins in the entire SEC with 6. Auburn's behind them with 5. But yeah, you look at it with shooters. John Petty, who's Mr. Basketball in Alabama the last 2 years, in the backcourt mate for Colin Sexton, he's probably their best three-point shooter, but he's horrible shooting the ball on the road. I think he's only averaging around 3 points a game on the road in conference play. So for him especially, he's a guy who can hit 10 threes at home and then go out 1-for-9 like he shot last night at Auburn and just be horrific.
There were a lot of bricks last night. And I'll say this about Auburn. Now, I thought, first of all, their atmosphere carried them last night. Fantastic atmosphere down there. And Bruce Pearl, you know, that's one thing he's going to do. He's going to stoke the flames there. He's going to create something good. And that's fun to see. Charles Barkley was sitting right there. The way they play, though, now they were missing Macklemore, right? He's out for the year. They had another kid. Which guy was it, Julian, that was sick and didn't play?
I'm not sure who it was, but they only had 7 scholarship players last
night.
They
had 7 guys. And I was thinking, well, here's a great opportunity for Alabama. They're fine at halftime. They weathered the storm early. The place is jacked up. Avery Johnson had to take a timeout about 1 minute in. They're down 8-0 before the seats got warm. They worked their way back. They're only down by like 3 or 4 at halftime.
They're down 5 at half.
Yeah, and so, okay, you're right there. You're right where you want to be. But there's just too many waves. But Auburn still scares me on a neutral court. If I'm Bruce Pearl, they really shake and bake. They go one-on-one. Their shot selection sometimes, to me, I go, eek. I don't know. I mean, they will take some crazy shots. Now, that is Bruce Pearl, though. What he does is he says, hey, you got the green light. I got confidence in you. I'm not going to – don't look over here if you take a bad shot. I'm not going to be that guy that starts reining you in.
But now because
but that's
of the
a double-edged sword,
they're
though.
A perimeter team. That's what they're going to have to do is just shoot away.
Some of
they
shots
can't do anything
they took,
underneath.
Some of the shots they took, and some of them went in. I'll say this. But on
well,
a neutral
scored,
court
– scored 90, I mean
– But they will
something had to be falling.
They will take some shots where it's basically, hey, one-on-one, I'm two steps behind the line. I'm going to shake and bake, sidestep, or step back and jack it up there. I don't know if that is going to get it done.
They're the textbook team for if you have a bad shooting night, you're done. I mean, that's in the yeah. one-and-done scenario, and you have a bad shooting night. Auburn is that textbook team where if they have a bad shooting night from outside, they're done.
Honestly,
well, also,
though,
but
that,
add
that's
this
about
to
a three-page list of teams in the country.
But there yeah. are. But the way you make up for that sometimes is if you have a great offensive rebounding team, you can still get your points because you can take those bad shots, you just shoot it, and you go get it. If it's not going in, you just rebound, stick it back in. But without the big man down there, then you know that element is going to be
well. Looking
minimized.
At KenPom, they're 31st as far as offensive rebound percentage in the country, which is encouraging.
That's very encouraging, but that's before. They lost – what position – Macklemore is a big man.
He
right?
was yeah. basically playing
he
center.
He was their guy, yeah. He
so
was
there you
their
go.
Man underneath.
So how will that percentage change from here to the end? That'll be an important number.
And then you had South Carolina beat Georgia last night.
Yeah, so Georgia's little
so
mini
sudden,
momentum swing. Oops.
So much for Whoops. All the – everybody getting excited about Georgia.
Yep.
That's how quickly it evaporates. They didn't look great. By the way, they were down 15 at the half. That, South Carolina.
Well,
it was never
that's
a
also
game.
That's also something to look for is how do you look when you lose those key games? And Georgia didn't look good.
No, they were never in the game.
And I'll tell you who hit that category for me last night, Louisville. They didn't look like they belonged on the same court with Duke.
It
now, that can happen to you at Duke, but for a team that, you know, if you're going to lose at Duke, you got the spotlight on you. It's probably some committee members watching there or at least paying attention. Would have helped if they had been a little more competitive.
Well, they weren't competitive Saturday at home. Julian was at the game. They were at home against North Carolina. They weren't competitive.
That doesn't bode well.
Yeah, ran off their own court.
Yeah, I don't think Louisville is going to be – they might not make the tournament because looking at the final schedule, they got to go to Virginia Tech, who's been playing well. They have home against Virginia. That's definitely going to be a loss. And then they're going at NC State, and NC State's been playing great. Looks like a team that might be a top four seed in the ACC in Kevin Keats' first year. So Louisville, I don't think they win a game the rest of the season here, at least in a regular season.
That's going to be shaky. Mm. Now, the good news for them is there's a lot of people right now, and this happens a lot during this date, you're looking around and you're going, I can't find enough teams to put 68 teams together. You know, when we do the bracketology tomorrow, there's going to be some teams that I say are right now in. We're saying, what? They're in, you know, it's whoever it's going to be. I haven't made the decision yet, but the last four or five, I'm going to be sort of searching for teams that with flawed resumes that you have to put in right now. So that's good news for teams on the outside who still have some work to do. Bubble's kind of wide right now. There's a lot of people out there.
We'll give you a chance to win some cool tickets on the other side as we wrap up the third hour next on 102.5 The Game. Kevin Kurz will join us to kick off the fourth and final hour of the broadcast. He is the Sharks reporter for The Athletic. So we'll talk about tonight's matchup with him coming up at 1 o'clock. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here at Jack Daniels Barrel House. We bring in Rebecca Keene, who is the Senior Director of Community Relations for the Predators, and she's going to tell you to get out your calendar and write all these things down because she has tonight, tomorrow, Saturday morning, and Sunday morning all mapped out for you. Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
Right? Social coordinator.
That's right.
We got it all mapped out.
Look, if you're looking for something to do, Rebecca is going to fill up your calendar.
We have a four-day weekend perfectly planned out and all benefiting charity, so it's a win-win.
That is a win. All right, let's start with tonight. So tonight, it's the Preds and the Sharks. and some really cool auction items available for the fans.
We do. A league-wide initiative is Hockey is for Everyone, and each team has an ambassador, and ours is Kyle Turris. And each home game this month of February, he's invited a youth agency to attend the game. Tonight we have kids from the Just Us program at Oasis Center, and they work with LGBT youth. And our auction tonight are Pride jerseys with the Preds logo on the front, and we have a Subban, a Nash, a Turris, and then we have some blank ones that Pekka has signed and Roman Yossi have signed. So all of the proceeds of those jerseys will benefit You Can Play in Oasis Center.
If it feels like Kyle Turris has been here for a long time, right? He has jumped right into the locker room, and it's been seamless, and he's jumped right into the community.
He has.
And he's been very active.
We are so grateful. I know my counterparts in Ottawa are so sad to see him go because he did a lot for that community. So we are very fortunate, and we're going to get him fully engaged in our community. And Hockey is for Everyone is a great start for him to learn about the Nashville community.
Let's learn more about your inaugural event tomorrow night here at Bridgestone Arena. Preds and Threads.
Preds and Threads.
Everybody gets dressed up.
Yes, we're going to have them in their finest Dillard's Threads and King Jewelers. They're going to be donned in diamonds, and our players are the models, and their wives will be modeling with them, along with a youth from local youth agencies such as Best Buddies, Cottage Cove, Nashville Inner City Ministry, and also Children's Hospital, and they will be walking the catwalk in some really fine attire. We'll have 900 people in the building.
Wow.
The arena will transform from tonight as a hockey rink to tomorrow to a catwalk, so it's going to be a fun event.
Willie, what are you wearing?
I will be wearing Dillard's. I'm not one of the featured guys, but I'm in with the Dillard's crew, so they did a great job for me. My time was in the fall. You know, I had to get ready for the season.
Well, they did their best with you.
They did.
They did. They helped.
But I think at the same time, I'm thinking, Willie doesn't make the cut for the runway walkers.
No, your partner is in the right position.
They've made good choices. C-Mace, Lindsay and Mace are going to
be the
hosts.
They're emceeing it, and they're the appropriate choices.
I think they'll have good chemistry, and they'll have a lot of fun talking about the guys as they go down the runway.
They seem like the fashion experts.
I think there was some plotting this morning. I said Rebecca came over, and there was a little huddle up to get a little strategy how to do that. That's going to be fun, though.
It'll be a great event. And we have an auction with over 200 items. Even if you're not at the event, you can peruse those items. It includes being in the team photograph. That's unique. The photo is in March, and you'll get to be in the front row with the entire team.
Wow.
We have a road trip with the team going to Phoenix, Denver, and Buffalo. So you get to ride on the team charter. So some really unique items. So you text the word fashion to 52182, and you can see
that. So you can do this now.
This is
live.
The road trip is a live auction item. Paul McCann will be our person auctioning it off.
Auctioneer, yeah.
And then the rest of the items are all online, and anyone can bid between now and tomorrow night.
52182 is what you text the Preds, and you said fashion?
Fashion, yes.
Okay, yeah, the auction items are always really, really cool.
The other unique item we had all the players make baskets of their favorites.
Really?
And so, I mean, we just got Mike Fisher's this morning, and it's got catching deer items and Ivy Cake cupcake gift certificates. So they really went personal, and their favorite candy and their favorite movies, and they hit it out of the park creating these baskets. So you get to learn a lot about these guys as to what they put in their baskets.
So tonight, Predator Sharks, tomorrow night, down on the floor, Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Threads. And just when you thought you were done, oh, no. Get up Saturday morning and do what?
You get to run a little 5K. You get to burn
That's
off
easy.
Everything you ate the night before.
3.1
miles.
It's easy. I've done a 5K. That's my limit. Willie's done the full. He's never done it again.
No. I've done two halves. That doesn't count.
You did the one full. Okay, right.
But I've done many a 5K. But that's an easy one. You can run it. You can walk it. That's the beauty of the 5K.
It's a casual event. You get to peruse downtown and see maybe parts that you have not seen before. So
if they wanted to just – because we talked to Drew Bennett one time. He just woke up and decided to do a full marathon, which is crazy. But if somebody's hearing this and they're like, hey, yeah, you know what, Saturday morning, that's cool. Like, you don't have to spend a ton of time. You do 5K. How can they get involved in that? What do they need to do?
Just come on down to the arena in the morning, and I think it starts at 9:30.
Okay.
And we have a course mapped out. You won't get lost. And just come run with us. Nash will be there. I'm assuming Pete Weber is the gun.
He's
the starter.
He's the starter.
He is the starter. So, and I know you run across the river and get to run around the stadium and run back. So, it's a good little run.
They shake up the course every year or two, so you get a little different look of downtown. Our downtown's always changing, so it's always a good time to maybe explore
a little bit.
Yeah, Rebecca, you guys. I mean, it's just incredible. Every year, you guys seem to raise more and more money, and these are very important, especially Friday. It's the big one. So what are the goals this year and maybe what you did last year in terms of the money you raised for the foundation?
So this year will be our largest one-time allocation of funds to the Middle Tennessee community. So if someone donates to our foundation, we are money in, money right back out to the Middle Tennessee. We have a grant program that our board members are currently reading applications, and we'll give out $550,000 in a day in May.
Wow.
We'll have 100 charities come to the arena. They accept their checks. It's this huge celebration, and the Preds and Threads benefits that program.
So how much fun is that day for you when you see all these people? And you build relationships with different people. You start to learn about what a lot of these organizations do, and then to be able to help them that day has got to be a blast.
We get to implement programs that may not happen, but because our players are willing to participate in these fantastic events and our fans support them, we raise money, and then we support organizations like Best Buddies, Children's Hospital, Cottage Cove, 100 of them, Make-A-Wish, you name it, we've given money to them, we support them, and it's just an easy way for people to get involved and give back.
Did you see the clips the other night from the Best Buddies event?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that one gets me every year. It's so much fun. Roman and Pekka and some of the guys that have built relationships with them, going back to Barry Trotz and then Shea Weber was instrumental. Just that one has been one that's been around for a long time.
That event is nothing but pure joy. You look at the videos, you look at the pictures. Hunter Hayes came and played. It's just a huge party with dancing and karaoke. There's nothing but joy out of that event.
And a lot of them will be here Friday night, a part of the whole Preds and Threads.
They'll be modeling with our players.
That'll be cool. And then finally, Sunday morning, Predators Blues, breakfast with the Preds. Speaking of auction items, you were telling us, really cool auction item on Sunday for the fans.
This has not been unveiled anywhere. We created jerseys in partnership with the National Fire Department, and they're called bunker gear. So it actually looks like a fireman's bunker, what they go into a fire wearing. And it's got the player's number on their back and their name on their back, their autograph. They've got reflective material on the sleeves. And the money raised from these jerseys, we have a full set, so one representing every player on the team. We'll work with the Metro or the National Fire Department to allocate that to more Middle Tennessee charities. And they are amazing. The auction opens tomorrow morning. There's a huge hockey tournament with the different fire departments at Fort Ice all weekend. And then the auction will close third period on Sunday. And Sunday is also our Proverbs 12:10 night. We're asking all fans to bring dog and cat food. So it's a charity night benefiting an animal rescue group.
You mean when they come through the door Sunday?
When they come through the door Sunday, bring dog and cat food.
Man, wow. you I hope everybody was
taking notes.
Down.
Take notes.
There's going to be some stuff here. One of them is going to hit your sweet spot. Yeah, something that means something to you. All of this stuff goes back, though. It does great things for our community.
Good to know.
Did you see the player calendars we created, the players and puppies?
Oh, yes. No doubt.
So the sales of
those calendars. Well, not all puppies. Scott Hartnell had a cat.
He had his cat hyena. That was a must. We had to have his pet cat in there who he adores. We raised over $42,000 from those calendars.
That is awesome.
And we'll be presenting Proverbs with their check from those calendars.
That was well done, by the way. I can't tell And talking to the players, they loved it. And the fans absolutely went crazy over those calendars. People would come in here for post game, and people had calendars seeing whatever player was coming, who they were, you know, some of them it's their pets. Kyle Turris told a great story. His dog, I talked to him about, you know, you took a picture. He said, yeah, it's not my dog. My dog's still stuck in Canada in customs. He hasn't been released yet, but we got an update. His dog is now here in Nashville with the family, but it took a while for the dog to get here. So we had to take a picture.
A stand-in.
Yeah, that's right, a stand-in.
Stunt double.
So it's really cool. Hey, Rebecca, thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me.
Rebecca Keene, Senior Director, Community Relations for the Nashville Predators. We just mapped out your next 4 days. A lot of stuff to do, a lot of cool stuff, and you can help some really good organizations. We'll come back with the fourth and final hour next on 102.5 The Game.